You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast, brought to you by Ministry Grid. Ministry Grid is an online church leadership and volunteer training platform offering a library of thousands of videos and a suite of powerful admin tools to provide practical training for every area of ministry in your church. Find out more and get a free 30-day trial at ministrygrid.com/howitworks. Hey, and welcome to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Barnabas Piper, here as usual with Todd Adkins. He's the Director of Leadership at Lifeway Christian Resources. And today, we have the pleasure of asking our 5 Leadership Questions of Dr. John Townsend. You probably recognize that name from the book Boundaries. That's probably his best known work, but also could be from the other 26 books he's written, possibly from the one that just released as of a week ago at the time of this recording, called The Entitlement Cure, Finding Success in Doing Hard Things the Right Way. So that's The Entitlement Cure. He's also a business consultant and a leadership coach, a psychologist, New York Times bestselling author I mentioned. So Dr. Townsend, we are honored to have you on the podcast with us and really look forward to this conversation.
Thanks, guys.
Would you mind starting us off by just introducing yourself to our listeners, letting them know a little bit about who you are, your current leadership role, and how you got there, your family, anything that's pertinent to who you are and what we'll be talking about today?
Yeah, sure. My role is basically to disseminate information from a growth model that I developed on how to help leaders and organizations and individuals experience growth on a performance level and on a personal level. I believe that you can't really separate your career success from your personal issues and success. So I'm kind of in a holistic space. As a psychologist, when I'm called into an organization, a lot of times I'll look at their strategy and figure out where things are in their systems and processes. But ultimately, it's a people problem. People aren't communicating, or they got the wrong people, or they're not working as a team and that sort of thing. And so that's kind of a big part of what I do. In terms of the the pie chart of my activities, I have an institute, the Townsend Institute of Leadership and Counseling, where a person can get an online degree based on my material, whether you get a master's in counseling or a master's in leadership or a credential in coaching. And we just opened that up a few months ago, so we're real excited about that. And I also do a lot of corporate leadership work where I just go in-house to companies, family-owned businesses, corporations, and small businesses, and work with their leadership teams and so forth and so on, and work with them as improve performance and make things better, especially on the cultural level. Mm-hmm. I write books, as we talked about. And I also have an organization called the Townsend Leadership Program. And what that is it's a cohort-based, groups-based system where a person that I've trained, we have a Townsend Leadership Directors all over the country now, where a person that I've trained will assemble a maximum of 10 people from all walks of life. They can be in IT, real estate, manufacturing, movie industry, agriculture, or whatever. And we do a one-day-a-month training of them on their strategies of life, their communication skills, and their personal life. And they do that for a year at a time, an intensive day a month. So a lot of my work has to do with helping and equip leaders of all stripes, either in-house or in my own organizations. I'm getting tired of talking about myself, but do you want to hear about my family?
Yeah, tell us about your family, because that's not yourself, and I'm sure you're proud of them.
I'm very proud of them. And my wife, Barbie, and I have two sons, Ricky and Benny. Barbie and I live in Newport Beach, California, and our sons, Ricky and Benny, are both college graduates and are on their own now in Los Angeles, so they get to come down for a free meal and some laundry every now and then, because we're in Orange County, California. And hobby-wise, I'm on a couple of boards. I enjoy being on boards and helping out in the service way, and I'm also in a band, and our band plays in low-rent bars and venues in Southern California. Come down and see us.
What's the name of the band?
Yeah, what's the name of the band?
Rock Tangle, like rectangle, but rock. We play a lot of blues, rock, you know, anything from old stuff to new stuff. We play Adele, Sublime, Red Hot Chili Peppers, but we also play Zeppelin and Beatles, kind of whatever you can enjoy and dance to. And our friends come and we have a good time.
Can we find Rock Tangle on iTunes?
Yes. Well, you can find them on their website, on our website.
But okay.
All right.
And Todd,
since we're a cover band, we don't really put anything out on iTunes.
Yeah, yeah.
Before we jump into our five questions, Dr. Townsend, I did want to give you a chance just to tell us a little bit about your new book. I mentioned it earlier, The Entitlement Cure. I read some about it online. I haven't had a chance to look at it yet, but the premise was really, really interesting to me, even just the title, the word entitlement, because that's something that is overwhelmingly around us all the time. So would you mind telling us just a little bit about the book, who it's aimed at, what the gist of it is, so that our listeners can have a sense of it?
Sure. Yeah. It's a truly, oh my gosh, topic that everybody's worried about. And I began noticing in the companies I work with and the employers and the employees both, as well as families that I work with anything from the parents to the adult children to the little children, and in our churches, unfortunately, there's a kind of a pervasive disease called entitlement. It's not a good thing. And I define entitlement on page 19 as two things. It's two attitudes. First is, I'm not responsible. So however I succeed or fail, it's not my fault. I'm just not responsible for my behavior. Somebody else is. And secondly is that I deserve special attention or special privileges. Now, that's not to say that that entitlement is not a good thing when it's in the right place. You know, the Bible talks a lot about taking care of the poor. And, you know, I'm glad when our veterans come back from the wars and they're taken care of by the government. That's a great thing. I'm talking about a psychology of entitlement that affects our businesses and our families. And so those two dynamics of I'm not responsible and I'm special, basically I come first, is been a big problem. It's costing America billions of dollars, in fact, worldwide, probably more than that, in terms of a low work ethic, issues of it's about me, self-absorption, an inability to be a team player, inability to extend past yourself and these sorts of things. And it affects families and relationships and marriage. So I decided to write a book on it. And in the book I put that the opposite of the cure for the entitlement is what's called the hard way. And I get that from Isaiah chapter 50, verse 7, where Jesus says in there, he says, I will not be put to shame by the Lord, and I've set my face like a flint, for he is with me. That he knew he was going to great pain and suffering for our benefit, and he set his face like a flint. He steeled himself. And that people who live life the hard way, they do difficult things. They make commitments and keep them, and they have tough conversations, and they admit things, and they look at themselves, and they try to change. And actually, it looks hard, but those are the most successful people in the world. And because I did a study of very successful people, and really successful people have the skills. I basically made it a skill-based book. How do you have the skills you need to break out of entitlement? Because people look for an easy way. I promise you, there's no easy way. There's either the hard way or the harder way. And if you want to cure entitlement, you do difficult things, and life opens up for you. And we're finding that people who live life the hard way have longer lives, fewer medical problems, fewer psychological problems, do better in their careers. So it's important.
That sounds fantastic, and I look forward to reading it. And to you listeners, that is available now, and you can get that, I'm sure, at any major book retailer. And again, the title is The Entitlement Cure, Finding Success in Doing Things the Right Way. So let's jump into our five questions now. I realize it's a bit of a shift, but here we go. The first one, and we ask every guest this, Dr. Townsend, and we just get this fascinating array of answers, is who are you learning from right now?
I swim in three rivers, guys. I'm a theologian, and so I like theology. I read a lot of theology books that are out there because I like the technical stuff, the Greek and the Hebrew. Mm-hmm. And all of my content in my books is biblically based, so that's very important to me. The second one is the performance literature, leadership. I really like people like Kuzes and Posner, for example.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, just how solid their thinking is and how evidence-based it is. I love Jim Collins because he's evidence-based. And I like a guy named Daniel Goleman because mm-hmm. he's the guy that invented EQ and had a lot to say about business and his book, Primal Leadership. And my third love is the psychological world, since I'm a psychologist. And I'm really studying a lot of neuroscience right now. Guys like Peter Senge and other people like that who are writing about, here's the big cool thing that affects so much of the work I do with organizations, is we're finding out now. We used to think that the brain was hardwired and it's going to be what the brain's going to be, and you couldn't affect the hardwiring. And so now we're finding out that's not true, that there's a term called neoplasticity, mm-hmm. meaning actual hard, the neural wirings of the brain can actually change with two things. They can change with relationships, and they can change with intense experiences, where you can have a person who is cranky and depressed and is not a team player, and actually take them through the right relational conversations and emotional conversations, and their wiring will change so they're not cranky and they're more of a team player. Just amazing stuff. So I spend a lot of time with that because of the companies I work with.
What's interesting about that, I think, is if you look at some of the stuff that we're doing right now as far as leadership development, is we would say that transformation happens, you know, transformational development happens when you have an overlap of knowledge, experience, and coaching. So I think it's very interesting. What was the name of that book again?
Which one?
The one that you were just talking about.
About neuroplasticity.
About neuroplasticity.
Oh, the guy's name is Senge. I'll look it up for you, Peter Senge, but I try to read everything he's got.
Gotcha.
And then, you know, you mentioned just a couple of categories. In terms of theology, is there somebody you're digging into right now that you're really enjoying, or are you going back to kind of old theological classics? Who are you looking at there?
Well, I always try to stay abreast of people who have good, thoughtful thinking today. Who do I like today? I always like Norm Wright because I think Norm Wright's very thoughtful and has a breadth of information about the culture that the Bible's written in. I've always liked Norm. And then I just like the, I also like just the ones that help me with the tools of the Hebrew and Greek. For example, right. I'm reading some technical commentaries on Leviticus, and you know, my friends go, that's the most boring book of the world. But when you really understand Leviticus, you understand the gospel. So I like technical stuff like that.
And that's fantastic. I don't know that we've had a guest on who's mentioned technical commentaries of Leviticus as one of their favorite learning tools. So
yeah,
congratulations.
I'm a little exciting guy, really.
Well, you're very well rounded, obviously, in terms of
you would love. Do you know Heath Thomas from Southeastern Seminary?
I've heard the name.
You should look up. He's got some really good stuff in Lamentations. Most people that have been listening to this podcast for about 40 episodes now are freaking out that I actually said something about Lamentations. Because usually it's all
guys. I just don't feel like, I don't think we've got the right to, you know, to pick and choose. I think we got to read all of it.
Well, I think that's definitely true. You mentioned, how people think Leviticus is one of the most boring books, and I think different parts of the Bible obviously we read differently, but I think you cannot skip things like that because it's a building block for everything that comes afterwards. And if you skip it, you don't understand the law. If you don't understand the law, you don't understand the gospel and its necessity. So I think. I love that you said that. I love that you're the first person on this podcast who said something along those lines.
Not only that, you can learn about leadership from Leviticus. Most of Mark Worth's leadership, there's a lot in there about it too. So it's pretty cool stuff if you're willing to spend the time.
Good deal. Well, I'm going to move us into our second question now, and that would be, what is the main point of emphasis for your leadership right now?
The main point is that I've refined my writings and books and everything down. And this is mainly because of the institute that I started, because when you do something like this, when you create a grad school, you've really got to be synthetic because people want to grab, what are you about that's distinct? You know, how are you differentiated in the marketplace?
Yeah.
So I would say the current thinking is that the model that I've developed is really two words, competency plus character, that leaders today need to be as well-honed as possible. They need to be as excellent as possible. And that, especially in the Christian world, you know, we can't hide behind the cross and say, well, we can be a B-level player. We got to be an A-level player. So really honing your skills, finding your gifts, finding what you're good at, knowing the overviews of business. I think every leader needs to understand business at a nuts and bolts systematic level. But then the second piece is character. Because one of the guys that I studied back when I was learning all this stuff, Peter Drucker, used to say, that culture will eat strategy for breakfast.
Yep.
And I just love that statement because what he's talking about, culture really is relationships and character. So you've got to learn what's inside your head. Are you connected to other people? Are you do you listen to other people well? Do you admit when you're wrong? Can you tell the truth? Can you do difficult things? Do you know who you are? And all that internal stuff is very important to drive the competency. So the two things I really have been putting all my words, the buckets are into competency issues and character issues.
That fits so well with so many of the conversations we've had on this podcast. Yeah. I mean, in every leader who we've talked to, who's doing great things, who we respect, has, even if they haven't used those exact terms, have talked about character being foundational and then that skills-based stuff on the other side, and how you, if you have one without the other, you lack everything it takes to be a leader, but you really, really need the character.
Yeah, if you have the character without the competency, you've got a really nice person who loves people who don't get anything done.
Right, exactly. Yep.
And they're fun to be with and go to parties, but that's kind of it. But if you've got the character, the competency without the character, you've got somebody nobody will work with, and they alienate people, and they live in silos, and they have attitude problems, and they can just destroy a really great team and organization. So they're both necessary.
Well, and the problem with that in the church is sometimes you'll meet a competent person, a person who appears to be a very competent leader, sharp, and you may put them in a position that, you know, we talk about the Peter principle all the time, being promoted beyond your competency, but we have a tendency to do the same thing in the church. When someone is really competent, sometimes we promote them beyond their character, and that's going to be a hot mess really quickly.
But, you know, there's a really good thing about that, guys. It's just in studying people for so long as I have, there are certain areas that you can't fix in competency. I mean, a really good CPA will probably not be a really good visionary, vice versa. Every now and then there's an exception. But, you know, skills are skills and right. Gifts are gifts. And you can increase in competency, but there's a limit. But there's no limit with character. I mean, God made us back in the very beginning, when he said subdue the world, take care of it, he made us with an infinite capacity to love him and love each other and be honest and tell the truth and shoulder our burdens and admit mistakes. So there's no, I never look at a ceiling on character. What I do look at is on a ceiling of a hunger for character.
Yeah.
When Jesus said, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, there are people that just go, and I'm not interested in growing as a person. That's kind of it for me. But that's self-imposed. God didn't make it that way. So there's no limit to how we can grow internally.
And the fact is, if you set a ceiling for yourself in character, that ceiling perpetually gets lower. Because if you're not striving forward, you are moving backward. There is no stationary when it comes to character, I don't think.
No, it has to be cultivated. You can't just say I've arrived and you're done, because that's when you turn around and you find yourself in a place you never dreamed you'd be.
I got a funny story about that.
Fire away.
Well, my wife and I were at an event recently, and we, a lot of people that we both knew and didn't know, and there was this one guy who we sat at the table with him, and he just talked about himself the whole time. And you know how it is, you want to be polite, but after about 15 minutes of stuff that nobody cares about, your eyes are rolling, and you're not, you know, you're just trying to drink more coffee so you don't fall asleep. And so let's call him Bill. His name isn't Bill, but... And so we're, you know, my wife and I are driving home, and we made the thought that he'd never gotten married nor had a really steady job. And the theory was he's never had anybody say how self-absorbed and boring he is. Nobody's ever given him feedback. And so he continued kind of bugging people. So yeah. My wife and I are at a hotel recently with some stuff we're doing. And we were doing their, you know, 27-year-old marriage, kind of fun, joking with each other. And I said, see, you question what I did. She says, yeah, I question what you did because that's my job. And if I didn't question what you did, you'd be like Bill at that table.
That's true. Feedback is another thing that comes up again and again and again, and the importance of having people in your life that are going to give you good, solid feedback.
I do want to move us on to our third question, and that is, what obstacles are you currently facing in leadership, either personally or as an organization, at a broader ministry level?
Well, I've got 501c3 businesses, and I've got for-profit business, so I'm kind of a hybrid of ministry and business. Mm-hmm. Business. But probably the biggest thing is that we sort of exploded in the last couple of years. Just a lot of things happened at one time. In a good way. And so I'm having to scramble to keep the infrastructure going so that I don't burn out good people that work with me, and to integrate the messaging and my branding being that we all have to grow in competency and character. So we're doing a lot of that work, developing infrastructure, making sure the branding is strategically aligned with the mission.
With such a disparate collection of businesses and ministries and authoring and speaking and these, how are you doing that across with all those tentacles in different directions? How are you having that singular message and the competency and character message? How are you fleshing that out in, you know, multiple different directions at once?
Well, I have a couple of habits that I've developed. And in fact, I train my executives in my portfolio in this also, is I'm a real big believer in reminders of simple things that are profound things. So on a regular basis, I remind myself, I have my mission statement and my core value statement for my personal life on my iPhone, because I travel around a lot. Mm-hmm. And I review that, even though I feel like, gosh, I know this, I just have to review it, because the neurology says, if you review it, you keep it. And it helps me to be focused so that every conversation I have, every blog I write, every company I work with, before I start that into that next expenditure energy, it's like, how does this further the mission? And so I try to stay very laser focused by reviewing what I'm really about. Then I have to have conversations with people too. So I'm sort of an over communicator of the big picture.
So it is a constant sort of one degree of separation of, if we are going to do something, how does it tie into this mission? How does it further this mission? There's no...
Yeah, I've had, you know, a lot of times in business, you know, good leaders will confuse strategy and tactics and think they're the same thing. And that's one of the things that can really take down an organization, guys, is...
Massive.
Is that, well, I got a new idea here. We're going to paint all our buildings green, and next month we're going to have barbecues for everybody, and next month we're going to go into Indonesia. And those are all great tactics. But the thing I have to stress, especially for a very creative sort of ADD leader who's very visionary, is once you have a strategic plan, no matter how great the tactics are, they must bend their knee to the strategy. And if they don't drive the strategy, put them on the parking lot until another time. And if they do that and they got that discipline, things go really well.
I think you're an ENTP with J tendencies.
Why do you say that?
I'm just going to toss that out there, because it sounds like you're extremely entrepreneurial, but you're also professorial, but you're also a solid business guy. So, you know, the ENTP is, of course, the classic entrepreneur. The ENTJ is a classic chief executive officer kind of guy. So
Yeah, it probably depends on what I had breakfast this morning.
Evidently, you had Wheaties almost more.
That's right. Well, breakfast of champions.
Boom. Well, you know, I think if we consider a lot of what you're saying is that sense of entitlement and how it connects in with work. Can you talk a little bit about that a bit more, because I do think that, you know, the idea of hard work is just, it's an interesting concept, I think, now, because you have a lot of the older generation that will tend to fault millennials, saying that they have a sense of entitlement. But from where I sit, I'm seeing a lot of sense of entitlement. I don't know that any one generation has the market cornered on that. Can you speak to that at all?
Yeah, it's a huge deal, guys. That when I began to study it seriously a couple of years ago before the book, entitlement is not a demographic curse. I've seen 23-year-olds that are the coolest people in the world, highly, highly responsible, loving people, committed, right kind of values, just the people you'd love to be around. And I've seen 85-year-old who just thought that they were the fourth member of the Trinity and they were a nightmare to be around. So I don't look at it like any kind of a generational problem. I look at it like a human problem, that ever since Adam and Eve, we've got problems with entitlement. And the workplace is where I actually first started noticing it, when I'd be working with teams and I'd see that some people would, for example, feel like they were owed special treatment because they're very talented, and they would kind of leverage that. Or I'd find out some people, you can really take down a very good team of seven or eight good people, like marketing and accounting and strategy and back office and finance. You can see, and then if one person is entitled, the toxicity of how they discourage people, make people feel helpless, make people feel like, why am I burning all my energy when this person's like doing the minimum? You can really take down a team. So I began to see that it had a really, really negative effect. I've got one client. His company's worth $4 billion. It'll be worth $8 billion in a couple of years. He's very successful and great guy, you know, good friend of mine. And sometimes I'll you know, when I'll have a break and I'll go by this office and I'll say, what are you doing? And he'll say, I'm doing what I hate right now. He said, I'm the visionary and I like to go around the world, you know, getting things stirred up. But I'm writing reports right now because nobody can do it but me. He says, I'm the only one who can do it. I'm not great at it, but it's my responsibility. And I think, well, the proof's in the pudding there.
Okay, I think that's a great time to move to our question number four. What does leadership look like in your home? You've told us a lot about, you know, different workplaces, different environments that you've been a part of. We've briefly touched on children, but what does leadership look like in your home?
Well, before the kids left, I really liked the way that the dance that Barbie and I did with the boys. I mean, I thought that she and I were really good mutual leaders with each other and very good at telling each other hard things and not getting defensive and, you know, for the sake of health and for sake of godliness and all that. And we've kind of raised the kids that there's such a thing as a generation gap and it's a good thing. And so we're going to listen to your opinion and we want you to have input in your life. But sooner or later, somebody's got to say the buck stops here, because what we noticed with a lot of our friends and neighbors, people we love, had kind of erased the generation gap. They wanted to be their child's best friend. They wanted to dress like their kids. They wanted to go to all activities with their kids. And I understand the need to, you know, want to connect with your children. But God created a generation gap for a reason. It's to give a child something to aspire to. Hey, look at them. They act like grown-ups and they make great decisions and they bear burdens and they hit home runs and they fail well and they love each other and they love God and look at what they accomplish. And if your model for an adult looks exactly and acts exactly like you, there's nothing to aspire to. And so we were trying to kind of really big with the boys on, this is what an adult acts like. You're not one yet. We love you, but you know, we're kind of in charge here.
I had a conversation recently with Dr. Meg Meeker, who she works with folks on the family. She's a pediatrician, and she was talking about the exact same thing, that idea that parents, and she was referring to mothers of girls, but I think it applies across the board, who dress and act exactly like their daughters. The word she used is, that's just creepy. She said it creeps the kids out. And I wanted to say, yeah, it creeps everybody else out too. But it doesn't give a child something to, you use the word aspire to, but even just that structure and that model of, there is a wiser person I can lean on. There's nobody to trust.
Yeah. Also, we were sort of anti-entitlement back in that day too, because in Orange County, California, there's a lot of that, even among the Christian population. And so, one time I was asked to go speak about entitlement issues as a leader to parents of children in Christian schools, private schools in the Midwest. So I was flying out there to help because the parents were worried, like, should I get Billy a BMW at 16 because his self-esteem depends on it? Should I get Susie an iPhone at 9 because she needs to be part of the crowd? It was just kind of nuts. And so I was flying over there, and I remembered as I was getting things ready, one of my kids was in college in that town. It was in Dallas, Texas. So I said, look, why don't you come in the last, I know you're in class, if you can finish your class and come into the school in the last 5 minutes of my talk and just say something, because parents want to see what the end product looks like. I mean, you know, you came out of the oven. They want to see you. Mm-hmm. He said, sure, I'll be glad to. He was a junior in college. So I'm up there speaking to these parents, like, you have to say no to this. These kids, if you want to create leaders, you've got to have kids that can take responsibility and, you know, they don't have to have all the coolest stuff, and that creates character and all this. And I told the story. I said, you know, one thing that Barbie and I did is we would tell the kids when they were growing up, you've got a lot of needs. You need love. You need faith. You need fun. You need sports. You need friendships. You need vacations. You need spiritual teaching. You got a lot of needs, and God gave us to you to meet those needs until you're out and about and on your own. So we're going to meet those needs. But guys, you don't deserve anything. You move, you know, you need a lot, but you don't deserve anything, because I wanted to eradicate the entitlement idea of I deserve all this stuff without working for it. So I'm telling the parents this stuff and they're writing these things down, like, okay, tell our kids we don't deserve anything, whatever. 5 minutes before I'm done, my son walks into the auditorium and I say, hey, come on up here, Ricky. Okay, here's who you want to hear, guys. Guys, and he hasn't heard anything I'm saying. He's just kind of driving from school. He said, hi, I'm Ricky Townsend. I'm a junior at SMU in business. And my dad asked me to speak on how do you, you know, raise Christian kids in affluent culture and all this. And, you know, I think about one thing my dad said a lot. He used to say, you don't deserve anything. And I dodged a bullet on that one because that was one thing that he remembered was we need a lot. We're responsible for a lot. But get out of the idea that you deserve better. That's what parents need to do. Well, meet your needs. But don't come at us with this, I deserve, because it's going to cripple your kid's character.
Well, the thing that, you know, that proves is just, you know, the things that I was saying earlier and what he said was what he heard from his parents. If you hear, hey, you aren't entitled to anything you don't sweat and struggle for, then you hear that several times. I mean, the blessing and the curse is when you find yourself talking to your kids and you sound just like your parents and you thought, I would never say that. Yeah. I'll never say that. And I'm like, it was almost hardwired into my brain into my mouth, at least to say some of the things that I currently say to my kids. And, and looking back, it's not really a bad thing.
I can tell you what the research says, cause I'm a research wonk, is the characteristics of a great leader are very similar research based on a research level to the characteristics of a great parent. There's always two dynamics. You'll find these two in every meta study you look at. They're highly warm. They're very warm people, you know, approachable, accessible, vulnerable. They're warm, and they're also strict. They don't mind saying, this is stop right here, set a boundary here. This is not okay. I'm disappointed here. Try again. If you put real warmth, authentic warmth in with authentic strictness, you got a good parent, you got a good leader.
I think, go ahead, Barnabas.
I was going to say, I think, you know, you were just talking about your college age son or your son when he was college age, which I think tees up our fifth question ideally, and that is thinking back to your college years, what would you tell your 20-year-old self about preparing to lead?
The one thing that I would have told me to do back then was concentrate more on your internal growth and less on your toolkit. I was in leadership training from back in college. I was involved in parachurch ministries and student organizations. And I was always really big on the tools, like, you know, how do you build teams and how do you establish vision? How do you have clarity? And I was trained on those things. But I think I was so enamored of that it's kind of like my identity was more as a leader than as a person. And I think I had to relearn those things later. The inside's definitely more important than the outside.
Well, I think that's a great place to land this because it ties really, really well to the character and competency conversation we had earlier. And it just wraps this up really nicely. So Dr. Townsend, thank you so much for taking time out of your day and sharing wisdom with us and our listeners. It's been a really enjoyable conversation. And one of my favorite things about doing these podcasts is how much I learn listening to our guests answer these questions. So thank you for the wisdom that you shared. I benefit from it. I'm sure Todd does as well.
Absolutely.
Thanks, guys.
And for you listeners, again, as we wrap this up, I just want to mention John Townsend's book. That is The Entitlement Cure, Finding Success in Doing Hard Things the Right Way. If you've enjoyed this episode and his insights on entitlement, on the parenting aspect of it, the business aspect of it, all of those things, grab that book. It's a great resource. Again, that's The Entitlement Cure. We really appreciate you listening. We would also appreciate it if you would jump on iTunes, leave us a rating and review, preferably a 5-star one, but we'll take whatever you choose to leave us. And thanks so much for listening.
Sense of entitlement.
Yeah, you don't owe us anything.
But we work really hard.
But we work hard, and it's really really not that hard for you to jump on iTunes and do this. So you can do a only sort of hard thing the right way and leave us a rating and review.
I'll tell you what, if you really want to grow as a leader, just go the extra mile and not only hit 5 stars, but also leave a nice review. Take the time to actually do the hard stuff and write that review.
And until next time, enjoy your guilt trip.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. To learn more about how you can train leaders in your church, visit ministrygrid.com/howitworks and watch a short demo video. For participating, you will get a free 30-day trial for your entire church. Again, that's ministrygrid.com/howitworks.